is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I think it's very important to not only have a practice schedule made every single day, but to also have coaching staff meetings beforehand. So you can get detailed with your assistants and say, hey, you know, you got the bigs, I've got the guards. With the bigs, we're really looking to do this. I'm working guards this, and we're trying to force this way or that way, whatever it may be. But I think communication, not only with players like we've talked earlier, but I think communication with your staff and investing in them as well and giving them opportunities to grow is a key component in having a successful program.
Trent Lloyd is the head coach at Pea Ridge High School in Pea Ridge, Arkansas. Trent grew up around the game of basketball his entire life. His dad was a basketball coach in Arkansas for over 30 years, so being at the gym and around the game is all Trent has ever known. He played for his dad at Van Buren High School for 3 years. Trent always knew he wanted to be a basketball coach for as long as he could remember. He graduated from college in 2011 at the University of Arkansas and took a junior high job at Pea Ridge straight out of college. Trent actually didn't even know how to get to Pea Ridge for that job interview, but he was fortunate enough to be able to land the junior high job at that time. 2 years later, at age 23, Coach Lloyd was offered the high school job when the previous head coach went into administration. Trent has just completed his sixth year as the high school coach at Pea Ridge, where the superintendent, principal, and athletic director are all former high school basketball coaches, so the amount of support and encouragement he has is unbelievable. Coach Lloyd has amassed a 140-49 one-loss record in his first six seasons at the helm of the Pea Ridge program. After you're finished listening to the show, hop over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review to help others in the basketball community find the Hoopheads podcast. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. You can find every episode we've ever recorded on our website, www.hoopheadspod.com. Take some notes and be ready to learn as you listen to this episode with Coach Trent Lloyd from Pea Ridge High School in the state of Arkansas.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from Pea Ridge High School in Pea Ridge, Arkansas, Coach Trent Lloyd. Trent, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas. Excited to be on.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to dig into what you're doing with your program there in Pea Ridge, Arkansas, and learn a little bit about more about you, your background. You have kind of a unique situation with your father being a longtime coach there in the state of Arkansas, and so we'll dive into that. And I want to start out, though, by going back to your childhood and talk a little bit about how and why you fell in love with the game of basketball.
Yeah, so my dad coached basketball in Arkansas for 30 plus years, and you know, I grew up just, of course, idolizing him and just wanting to do and be just like him. And you know, he'd come check me out when I was in elementary school, and I'd hop on the bus and, you know, make the away trips, and I'd be able to be a part and sit on the bench and be in the huddles and, you know, just be a part of it like a lot of coaches' kids are. And I knew just immediately that, you know, this is the route I always wanted to do. I always wanted to be a basketball coach just like my dad. You know, I got to see him have the relationships, the player relationships that he's had, and how those have kind of developed as some of his players have gotten older. But as a youngster, I was, you know, from the beginning, I was just in awe of wanting to be just like him and, you know, wanting to just be that high school basketball coach like he was.
So when you were a kid, did you play other sports besides basketball? Did your dad coach anything besides basketball at any point when you were growing up?
No, he was just a basketball coach. I played football and baseball. I quit football after my ninth grade year and got into high school and wanted to just focus on basketball and baseball. And, you know, my dad, he's also athletic director, and he tried to talk me into keep playing football and just play all three. But, you know, I loved being in the gym. I loved everything that came with being a basketball player in the off season and the weights and the skill development. It's just, you know, it's always caught my eye and had my heart from the beginning.
So two questions. I want to throw the first one at you from your perspective now as a high school coach. What's your take? What's your position on multi-sport athletes and how those kids participate in your program and what you'd like to see from a kid, whether it's, you know, the specialization, which obviously a lot of people at a younger age, we're seeing that far more frequently, I think, than we did, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Just talk a little bit about your experience as a multi-sport athlete, both as a kid and then how that relates to how you look at that from a high school coaching perspective.
You know, I think the multi-sport athlete, what it does for you as a player, when you're not in the gym 365 or whatever, it just keeps you constantly excited and engaged about the game. There's never that lull. Now, I've always been the guy that said, you know, to be a really good basketball player, I feel like you've got to be in the gym a lot. Like, I don't think you can just leave the game for 3 months. I think the skill and everything's extremely important, but I think it's great that, you know, you go somewhere else and compete. And in the fall, we've got a lot of guys at P Ridge that play football. Well, those guys every Friday night are competing at a high level. And I think that competitive nature really helps you when you get those guys in the gym. And of course, the physicality and everything that comes with it. But, you know, we ask our guys, if, you know, if you're the multi-sport athlete, we want them still coming in and making a certain amount of shots every week, working on skill just for, you know, 15, 20 minutes maybe before school or after school, ball handling separately as well. But I do. I think the multi-sport athlete, I think it's great. We encourage it, especially, you know, we're a 4A school in Arkansas, so we're about mid-level, about 150, 160 a class. And we've got to have our best athletes playing all the sports, or you won't see success across the board like we want to see. So I do. I think as a player, it was good for me to be a multi-sport athlete. But I think as a coach, you really see it as well. I mean, selfishly, would you like to have all 20 of your guys in the gym? Yeah, of course. But there's a lot of positives that come from the multi-sport athlete that, you know, when those kids enter the gym and they're excited to be in basketball and football's over at the end of October or 1st of November, it's fun. It's exciting. It's a nice little boost for our guys when we get them.
Yeah, I think there's a recharging of the batteries, too, in a lot of cases, where kids are away from it and they're playing something else and maybe they have a different role, or, you know, they're just, you know, on the basketball team, they're a star, but on the football field, they're just an average player, or maybe vice versa. And I think when you get those, you know, that breadth of experience, it can bring something new and fresh to, you know, the kids that are doing it year round. And obviously, like you said, as a coach, in a lot of ways, we tend to be, hey, we'd love to have our kids in the gym, all 20 kids who are part of our, you know, high school program, being in the gym every single day and being with us and doing all the things that we want them to do. And yet, I do think that there's something to be said for developing that all-around athleticism, especially at the high school level, that does make a difference and does impact your team in a positive way. I know you mentioned in your bio that you sent over before the podcast that a lot of your administrators are former basketball coaches. So do you think that helps from a standpoint of having them understand kind of some of the things that you go through as a varsity head coach?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I've got the best administration that I think a basketball coach could ask for. I've got a superintendent, an athletic director, and a principal that are all former basketball coaches, and they get it. You know, they do so many of the little things for you as a coach, especially during basketball season when, you know, it's long. It starts in November. It doesn't end until March. And they do all the little things of, you know, on road trips, letting you get out of school just a little bit early to have a practice. Or if you're in a state tournament or regional tournament, maybe letting you leave a night early before a 4 or 5 hour drive. And just having that kind of support, it's big. I mean, you know, they even go the distance of, you know, maybe if you lose a tough one or, you know, you had a heartbreaker, that next day they make sure to stop by the office in the morning or in the afternoon and just kind of check on you. You see how you're doing, give you a couple of words of encouragement.
Absolutely.
As basketball coaches, when you're playing, you know, 35 games a year, that, you know, you need that. You need that motivation, and especially from the guys that are your bosses that understand it.
Yeah, it's nice to have that kind of recognition. I know that, you know, I've been around lots of different coaches and programs, and a lot of times it is when you have an administrator who maybe doesn't have an athletic background or maybe even not specific to basketball, it makes it sometimes a lot more challenging to have them understand sort of the position that you're in as a coach. And it is much easier. I know that when I was coaching, it's been a little while, but when I was coaching in high school, we had administrators who were either fans of the basketball team or were former coaches themselves, whatever the sport, it always felt like things during the season went much smoother simply because those people had experience of kind of understanding what we as the coaching staff were going through at that time. So I do think that that's a huge advantage to have people who have an athletic background in your administration as your support sort of behind the scenes when you go through whatever it is that you're going through, whether it's the big highs of wins or, you know, the tough moments of losses or having issues with your team. I think when you have a supportive administration, that's a huge benefit to any high school coach. I want to jump backwards though, Trent, because I want to make sure I don't bypass this because I think it's an interesting question. And that is, when you were playing for your dad. Can you describe some of the dynamics of what that was like in terms of just how your dad coached you, maybe compared to the other kids, and how you sort of had to navigate the fact that not only is my dad, but he's also the coach and I've got teammates. And can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you and your dad at that time?
No, yeah, it's a different dynamic when, you know, you're a player on the team and your dad's the coach as far as, you know, what's going on in the locker room, what's being said in the locker room. But, you know, my dad did a phenomenal job of, we would leave it at the gym. So it was coach player at the gym. But the moment we left, you know, if I brought up anything, if I started the conversation at home, then I kind of knew what I was getting into. But if I didn't, you know, we wouldn't talk about it just a whole lot. I mean, obviously we're a sports family. We're fans of the game. So we'd go home and we'd still watch basketball and this and that. And, you know, we'd always talk positives and stuff. But as far as like me going home and still, you know, getting another butt chewing or anything like that after a loss or, you know, anything of that matter, that just never happened. He, you know, I don't think I could have asked for a dad to have handled being the father-son coach-player relationship any better than he did. You know, and it is different. It's different as a player. It's a different dynamic, like I was saying, in the locker room. You know, everybody always has that chatter of guys need to get out frustration on, you know, a coach or this or that. I mean, and, you know, that happens. But when you're a player there, it was I had to leave the locker room, I'm sure, before that started. But you know, I couldn't have been blessed with a better father to kind of, you know, sail through that ocean of how to handle that, not only in the gym but outside of the gym. And you know, I think my expectations and what he demanded of me were, of course, you know, I think as a father that you're going to do that. If you're going to expect more from your son on the team as far as accountability, attention to detail, you know, making sure everybody's ready to go and practice every day. You know, that's just kind of the things that are kind of unsaid that they expect out of us. And, you know, I think that I try to do that often. And so I think that helped that situation.
Was that something that you appreciated all the time? Or were there moments where you're like, man, my dad is, you know, why is he so hard on me and he's not on these other guys? Or was it just something that the dynamic, you kind of knew that, hey, this is what my dad expects of me and I'm going to do it? Or were there times where you felt like maybe he was putting too much on you because you were his son?
No, not really. I think that one thing he always did well, and I mean, I just rave about him all the time, but one thing that I think he's always done really well was he's always told me, you are what you allow. And so he wouldn't let things slide with me, but he wasn't going to let things slide with other players as well. So the same accountability system was always there. So it wasn't like he was going to let this player slack off and miss this slide defensively or make this turnover and then get after me when I did it, because he was just consistent from start to finish as long as I've known him. And I think that makes that transition of, like you were saying, well, he's getting on me harder, he's getting on me more. I think when the consistency's there, it's easy to swallow a little bit more. Now, did he get on me? Yes, he did. I mean, and I think that, you know, maybe he could, you know, would you say a little bit harder? I don't know, maybe. But as far as was it earned every time, most likely it probably was. But I mean, I think the consistency in that deal as a player that's playing for your father, I think that's all you can ask for is the consistency of that.
Yeah. And I think that's even more important for the other players, even more so than for you as his son, because I think that's one of the dangers that whenever you see coaches coaching their sons, the one thing that I always kind of keep an eye out for is, are they being, and I don't even know if the word's tougher, but are they holding their son to the same level of accountability that they're holding everybody else to? And when you get into dangerous situations is when there's less accountability, where the son can make a bunch of mistakes or miss a bunch of shots or do things that maybe, again, they're not living up to the standard that the other players have to live up to. And that's when you get into that slippery slope. So I know my son's in seventh grade and I've just coached him on a, you know, the AAU travel circuit, so to speak. And I've always tried to kind of hold him to, you know, we have our baseline standard of this is what we want everybody to do. And then I expect my son to be one step above that in terms of leadership and being a great teammate, not so much in terms of his play on the floor, but just sort of those intangible things that, you know, you're looking for if you're a coach that, you know, make a difference, but aren't necessarily, you know, I don't want you to score more or get more rebounds, but I want you to be the best teammate. I want you to be the best leader. I want you to be the guy in the locker room that gets us organized, all those kinds of things that it's easy to take those things for granted. But those are the kind of things that I tried to put on my son when I'm coaching him.
No, for sure. And that's what, you know, my dad always would say, try to be the glue guy, you know, because he knows that I know exactly what he's wanting because I've been around it forever.
Right.
And so just be that glue guy. You know, I don't have to be the leading scorer or this or that, but be that guy that, you know, in the locker room is making sure that, you know, we're doing things right in practice, having those side conversations that, you know, I always say as a coach, I don't want to be the one having to correct everybody all the time. A player-led team is going to be way more successful than a coach-led team when players take ownership and, you know, you've got your starting shooting guard going up to, you know, your second team shooting guard saying, hey, no, we want you to do this or that. And you're paying attention and they're saying everything right to them. That's when you feel like your team's got a chance to be really successful. And I think when you've got a coach's kid on the floor, I think that is when they can really make an impact because they know exactly what needs to be said to, you know, what player at the right time. So I think that's like you're saying, I think that's one of the advantages of here's the baseline, but here's where you really can take us to another level. And I think that's really where it's at.
Yeah. I think that's something that good coaches do. And again, it may not even be with your own son, but I think sometimes coaches find, again, we have our baseline standard and then we find our kids who are our leaders that we hold to maybe even a little bit higher standard. And again, not necessarily with the stuff on the floor, but just in terms of those intangibles, leaders, captains, however you want to phrase it. And those kids become the leaders of the other players. And to your point, I think it's a great one that you made is when you have player-led teams, those are the teams that have that type of accountability that allows you to be successful because a coach obviously can't see every single interaction. The coach isn't there every single moment in the locker room. And, you know, players, let's face it, the players are out on the floor playing the game. And when they're holding each other accountable to the standards that the coach has set, that's really where you have something. So what was your favorite memory of your high school days with your dad? Can you pick out maybe one or two things that stand out to you as, wow, this is one of the best moments of my high school career with my dad?
You know, I think it's tough to pinpoint one or two. So I had the opportunity my senior year, we closed down our old gym and moved into our new high school and arena. We did that over Christmas break. And so we played our rival, was our last game in our old gym. And of course the place was just packed. And I think that memory of the crowd and us playing well and winning and kind of the celebration that we all had on the floor together. And then also as a family, just because of how many years he's coached in that gym, I think that was a really cool moment. And then to, you know, skip 3-4 weeks ahead when Christmas break was over and then we opened up the new arena. And it just kind of felt like when that new arena was built that, you know, as for me that, you know, as a son, I felt like my father's put in a lot of time and effort into that community and that basketball program that he kind of built that arena, so to be said. And so it was a cool moment to kind of be a part of that transition for Van Buren High School. So I would put that one up there probably at the top of closing down the high school and moving into the new arena.
Do you remember how your dad felt about the old gym closing down?
Oh, I think it was bittersweet. You know, I think it was, he's had so many memories in that gym and the atmosphere that you would get and just, you know, everything that comes with the old gym and the community that, you know, filled it up. But the arena was, you know, the arena was a spark as well. You know, everybody, all these high schools, the big ones, they're starting to get these nice arenas and it's kind of tough that, you know, you feel like you're getting left behind a little bit, but they were ahead of the game and built a really nice arena. And so it was bittersweet just of all the time and hours and, you know, blood, sweat and tears that were poured into that gym. But it was a cool moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anytime you're in a place where you put in so much time and effort and blood, sweat, tears, in there. I'm sure your dad was, it was tough to see it go. And yet at the same time, like you said, progress is definitely calling. And when you can put your team into a newer, nicer facility, obviously it just can take your program up a whole nother level. So I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier that you knew from a very, very early age that you wanted to coach as a result of the influence of your father. So what was it, as you looked at your dad, his life, coaching, what that was all about, what was it about coaching besides the fact that your dad did it? Like specifically, what did you love about coaching that made you thought, hey, this is something I could do for the rest of my life?
You know, I think always being around basketball, and that's always the game that was my first love, and thinking that I can do that forever was a cool thought. Obviously, when you're little and you're on the bus and you get to see how his high school players looked up to him and saw him as a role model and the relationship he had with them. And obviously, when I'm the little dude on the bus, you know, the guys that I idolized are looking up to him. And so I got to see that. And, you know, I even appreciate it more now that, you know, I'm sitting here at 30 years old and he's had guys that, you know, that are 40, 45, that when they're in town, they make sure that, you know, they come by and see him. Wherever he's at, they're going to go out of their way to call him or come by and see him. And, you know, you get to see those, you know, forever relationships that he's built with his players. And I've always thought that that's a really cool experience as a coach, is, you know, being able to have an opportunity every single day to impact a player, a young adult's life, and hopefully a positive way.
All right. So you know that that's what you want to do. So you graduate from Arkansas. And you're looking around, and describe that first opportunity you got to coach junior high basketball, how it came to be. And then we'll talk kind of a little bit about how that first experience went and what you were like as a coach in that first year and that first opportunity that you got.
For sure. So I graduated from the University of Arkansas, and, you know, obviously like everybody else, just trying to find a job, trying to find a basketball job. And my dad's assistant coach had a former player named Charlie Clark that was the head coach at Pea Ridge, which is about 35 minutes north of Fayetteville. It's right outside of Bentonville. And I'd never heard of really Pea Ridge or knew where it was at. I thought I was going to a different exit. And had an interview there. And my other option was I was about to be an assistant baseball coach in Fort Smith, Arkansas, just because those were the only options I had. And I was fortunate enough to land this junior high job up in Pea Ridge, and I worked for a great mentor named Charlie Clark that taught me a lot about player coach relationships as well. And, you know, just the everyday grind during basketball season. And I was able to be junior high coach under him for 2 years.
So what do you remember about that first time you walked in the gym and faced a team that obviously you had seen your dad do this time and time and time again? And now suddenly here you are as the guy standing in front of 12 or 15 kids, however many you had on your team back then. And now instead of looking at your dad, they're looking at you. So what do you remember about that first practice or those first few days with your very first team?
Oh, it was, you know, very nerve-wracking. I mean, obviously I was talking to Coach Clark a ton, just trying to pick his brain, make sure my practice schedule was right, make sure, you know, all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed. But I would be on the phone that entire day with my dad as well, just kind of like, hey, now, listen, when I do this drill, is this right? Like, am I teaching this right? Are the details right? And those first couple practices were very nerve-wracking, but then you kind of hit your stride in that aspect. But, I mean, obviously the daily conversation with him and with Coach Clark of, you know, how should this run? How can I have the most effective, smooth practice possible? I mean, I still do that today with my dad. And, you know, I think that the first game, you're not sure how your personality is really going to be as a coach until you get out there and the game just starts. And next thing you know, it's second quarter and you're being active and you're kind of, you know, not jumping around, but, you know, you're showing your personality and kind of figuring it out as you go. But that first year was a lot of fun. And I was lucky to have a very good group of kids in junior high that were coachable, that parents loved the game, that, you know, I don't know as far as what I'd rate myself 1 to 10, what I did myself that first year, but, you know, the grind was there, the ups and downs were there, and it was a very beneficial year for me that I was just very fortunate to have, you know, a good community behind me.
All right. So two questions. both very similar. What's something that that first year you think you did pretty well as you look back on it? And what's something that you look back on and you're like, I don't know, I wasn't too good at that time.
I think the, just the feel as the first year, the feel of the game, as far as, you know, when to, you know, when to maybe call a timeout or maybe when to run this set play or that set play, or, you know, just, you know, maybe a couple wrinkles here and there. I don't know if I was as smooth as at that aspect of the game right off the bat. I think I got better as I went. I think that I did a really good job the first year of coming in and building player relationships and gaining trust, where my players never questioned anything for me being a first year guy. I think I gained all of their trust early and kept it throughout the year. And so I think that, you know, if I ever made the wrong call, this or that, I don't think they were ever questioning because I was young, because I felt like I did a good job earning their respect early.
So talk about how you went about doing that, because I think there's a lot of young coaches out there that may be listening that are looking at their situation and their team and saying, how can I build better relationships and better trust with my players? So can you point to anything specific that you did, or just remembering back on that time, what you did to gain your players' trust and to build those relationships? Because obviously you've described already the situation that your father had, where he's got guys that, you know, might have played for him 30 years ago that are still coming back to visit him. So obviously you had a great role model in terms of building relationships. So can you talk about some of the specifics maybe that you did to do those things?
Yeah, you know, I think when building trust, I think your players have to know that you care about them outside of basketball. And so I've always tried to, you know, ask how their family's doing, you know, just kind of joke around, you know, this or that of, you know, how's their girlfriend doing, or how's the other sports going, or how's work, or this or that, just investing in them outside of basketball. I've always said that, you know, as a coach, we always use the metaphor of, you know, we want our players to run through a brick wall for us. Well, I want my players to know that I'm going to do the same for them. And I feel like they need to know that for that trust factor to be there. So I want to have their back, whether it is on the basketball floor, whether it's, you know, maybe it's in the classroom or just in the community. If they're acting right, I want them to always know that I'm always going to be there for them. If anything's wrong, they can always call me. But I think that those trust factors, I think you start building them up by going out of your way. I try in the hallway, I try to make sure any player I see, I go out of my way and, you know, say, hey, tap them on the back, have small conversation as we're walking down the hallway, because I feel like that means a lot to kids. You never know what kids are going through this day or that day. And so just, you know, sometimes when you just see them in practice and then you start getting on them in practice when they screw up, it can be tough to kind of have that relationship. But if you've had that conversation earlier in the day and you've joked around with them a little bit earlier in the day, then it's easier to, you know, keep them accountable as well. But I do, I think the trust factor and investing in the kids outside of just basketball is a big component to gaining their trust.
So you mentioned one place where you have those conversations, which is in the hallway or just if you have them in class. Do you have those conversations on any type of formal basis where, like, maybe you meet with a kid for a minute or two before practice in a formal way? Or is it something that, like, maybe while you're stretching or the kids are coming out, you know, after they walk down from class after school and are getting ready for practice, where you have those casual conversations? How do you go about having, you know, those types of discussions that you just described, where you're asking about their work or their girlfriend or their family? When do those conversations take place in your program and how you do things?
I think they take place throughout the entire day. I think that, you know, whether it's after practice, before practice, during lunch, during, you know, if you've got them in class or in the hallway, you know, I try to do, even in practice, more game-related, building confidence. But I try and practice, whether if it's shooting free throws or maybe in between some drills or during stretching, of going and having one-on-one conversations with our guys throughout practice. And, you know, just whether it's building confidence, whether it's kind of just, you know, putting your hands on their shoulders and tapping them and, you know, just really just going out of your way and letting them know that, yeah, no, I see you, I'm paying attention to you, you mean a lot to me. I think one-on-one conversations are big. And I think you've got to be able to read players as well. We can, I mean, as coaches, you can read body language. You can tell when a kid's up or when he's down. And I think that kind of bases a little bit of what type of conversation you go have with them. But, you know, I think the one-on-one stuff as a coach is, I mean, it's just astronomical of the impact it can have on your team and players.
So that first year when you were the junior high coach, were you teaching at the junior high at that time?
I was.
And so now you're at P. Ridge High School where you're coaching.
Yes, those first 2 years I had 5 math classes, and that was a struggle a little bit. And then so when I got the high school job, I moved in, you know, to 3 or 4 oral comm classes. So
gotcha.
A little different animal.
Math is fun, man.
See, you woke up Coach Jason over here, man, with your math talk.
I'm a fourth grade math teacher, so I
okay.
But now, I know it's a little different than middle school math, but.
Well, I've always said if I was going to have to teach a core subject, that math would definitely want to be it, just because, you know, I think, especially as a coach with all of the stats and everything we do, there's a lot of math that's constantly going in our head as well. So it's kind of I wouldn't say easy transition, but it kind of stays on the same wavelength that our minds are constantly working on.
All right. So I want to ask you this question. Do you have coaching friends there in Arkansas that coach teams that do not work in the building where they coach?
I do. Yes,
I do. So can you talk about what you feel is the advantage? And I mean, I think we already know the answer, but I'm just curious to get your perspective of what do you feel is the advantage of you being in the building every day versus maybe a colleague who you know who coaches a team but is not in the building every day? They have an outside job that, you know, doesn't involve teaching in the building.
For sure. I think the accountability that you get to keep your players on when you're in the building, when they know that you're interacting with their teachers, when you know that they know that, you know, you're walking the halls, I think, one, it keeps them more accountable to act right and do right when they know you're there. I think it also helps, like we've talked, of being able to have those side conversations. If you're not getting to see your kids all day and then they just see you in practice and let's say it's a bad practice, then you're on them. Well, you know, you haven't had a chance to really invest in that relationship because you don't have the opportunity to. Where when you're in the classroom with them, when you're in the hallway, in the lunchroom with them, it just seems like it makes everything go a lot smoother because of the, you know, the opportunity to have that one-on-one and the opportunity of them knowing that, yeah, no, he sees my math teacher. So if I'm not acting right, I'm probably getting an email or they know this or that.
Right.
Communication. So it definitely helps being in the same school.
Some of the guys that you know that aren't in the school, have they ever talked to you about what they feel are some of the disadvantages or the downside, or maybe some specific experiences that they've had where, oh, if I would have only been on the building, I could have taken care of this, or I could have made this work better. Is there anything that you can point to specifically there?
I think the thing most of them talk about is, like, when a kid's having trouble in class or, you know, anything like that, they're just not a part of it. And so they're not involved. They don't know the teachers and they can't get a hold of them as easy. So sometimes they're blindsided by those grades if they're not keeping up with them. But, you know, when you're in the same building as your kids, we do a lot of extra work, whether it's in their study hall or before school or during lunch or after school, where, you know, we get them in the gym for 20, 25 minutes for these certain segments to just make sure our kids are caught up with everything we're doing or getting extra shots in, for whether kids just want them or maybe they're slumping, of having that opportunity of that those guys don't have any chance of getting. And I think that's one of the main things that's just tough on them when they're not in the building is those side conversations, a play relationship, but also just kind of not – you don't get a vibe and you don't know what's really going on with your kids all the time when you're not in the same building.
Yeah, I think it's a huge advantage to be in the building. I know I've said this before on the podcast, but when I was coaching at the school where I work, I teach in the elementary school and I was the varsity assistant coach for 13 years. And the way our school district is set up, our elementary school is literally right across the parking lot from the high school. And even then, the two guys who were our high school head varsity coach and our JV coach both worked in the high school. And there were still times where I felt like, compared to them, the relationships that they were able to build with kids through what you described on a daily basis gave them an advantage over me in that respect. And also I felt like there was a communication gap sometimes where something would come up during the day and practice would have to get shifted and you know, they might send me an email, but I might not check the email, or I'd get a voicemail or whatever. And I just felt like there was, even though I was very, very close, it was just one step removed. And I always said to myself that, you know, if I were ever to get a high school head varsity job, or, you know, if I looked around at other people who were, you know, coaching elsewhere who weren't in the building, I just always looked at that as a huge disadvantage, simply because of the communication. And as you said, the ability to develop those relationships with kids, it's just different when you're seeing them 6 hours a day, as opposed to, I just come in, I practice with them, and then we all, you know, jump in our cars and head home. It's just not the same relationship that you can get with them day after day after day after day. And like you said, knowing their teachers, I think, is a big advantage too, because they know that, you know, coach isn't coming from, you know, working at IBM. Instead, coach is there every single day, and he's friends with our, he's friends with my teachers. And so he's certainly going to find out, you know, if I'm doing anything that I'm not supposed to. So I do think it helps you to keep a tighter handle on your players, for sure.
All right, I want to ask. Go ahead. Impact. No, it's, I mean, you're exactly right. The impact, I don't think most people even realize with everything that comes with being there every day, and you know, like you're saying, not coming from an outside job or another school building. So it is, it's a big advantage for the coaches that are in the school.
All right, so let's go through. You coached a second year of junior high basketball, and then you had an opportunity to move up to be the high school coach. Talk about how that came to pass and what your initial feelings were about that opportunity coming to you at such a young age.
Yes. So second year's junior high coach was completed, and our senior high coach decided he was going into administration, and our superintendent and athletic director thought that what they've seen after the first couple of years, and kind of just knowing my background and growing up around basketball, that they felt like I was ready. And I mean, I couldn't be more grateful for, you know, them having that type of trust in me to take over their basketball program, because I mean, Pea Ridge is a basketball town. People love their sports there, and you know, kind of hand over the keys to the kingdom to, you know, a 23, 24 year old was risky from their standpoint. So it was, you know, very blessed to have that opportunity and have people that show the faith and the trust in you to lead the program and keep it going in the right direction. And so very grateful for that opportunity.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
Did it help when you transitioned into the varsity coach job that you had worked with some of the kids at the middle school level, or did that not really affect it at all? What do you think?
Oh, it was big. I think it was astronomical to how things just, I mean, it just made everything so smooth, because I'd had the ninth graders, the eighth graders, so they were now juniors and sophomores as far as coming up. And it was nice to, you know, I had, at our level, I was head junior high coach, but I was also assistant varsity coach. So I had relationships with the upperclassmen, but just not the same as what I had with my junior high guys. So the younger guys knew exactly how I was going to coach. They knew kind of, I was able to have a couple wrinkles in junior high that were separate from our senior high. And so they knew already kind of that aspect and the details and what the expectations were. They knew how practice was going to flow. And I think that's a great point. I think that was huge with the transition. And also having kids that believed in you already. You know, you get that opportunity at a young age, and, you know, I'm 24 and having 18-year-olds underneath me, it's nice having the trust from them already because of being involved with them, coaching them, and just having those opportunities. But no, it was, it made the transition a lot smoother.
So when you take over the job, what are first one or two things that you looked at that you said, here's what I want to get done right away? Not in terms of necessarily even basketball X's and O's, but just if you looked at your program and you asked yourself, what do I want to see my program at P Ridge be all about? What were a couple of things that you said this year, we're going to accomplish these couple of things to make the program start heading in the direction that I want it to go?
We knew that we were going to have a little bit of trouble scoring the basketball. And so I wanted to come in with a huge defensive mindset. I wanted to instill effort and discipline and detail throughout practice. And I wanted to have a main focus on the defensive side of the basketball. And our goal was to only give up 8 points a game, or 8 points a quarter, excuse me, with a defensive mindset of just 8 points a quarter. We were going to be patient offensively. Wasn't going to be a stall by any means, but we were going to be patient. And then we were going to play half court, pack line, man to man, keep people out of the paint. And this group really bought into it. We took 3 or 4 charges a game. We held people to about 37 points a game. And so we missed our mark just a little bit, but it gave us an opportunity with some kids that won just, you know, 2 or 3 games when they were in ninth grade, our senior class, to going 14-14 that first year because of how selfless these kids were to really buckle down and guard and buy into, we know this is how we have to win. And I was very pleased with how that first year went.
So how do you sell that to your kids? Because obviously everybody loves offense, and especially in today's basketball, everybody wants to get threes up and run up and down the floor and score lots of points. So obviously I'm guessing it goes back to the trust and the relationship that you had already built with those kids. But just talk a little bit about how you try to instill that defensive philosophy, that toughness that was required to hold teams to 37 points a game.
I think as a coaching staff, you've got to really celebrate good defensive effort. You know, we all love to celebrate the kid who gets 25 points. We all love to celebrate the dunks and the fancy passes. But are we celebrating the kid who slides over and takes a charge? Are we celebrating the kid that, you know, helps the helper to prevent a layup and causes them to have to kick the ball out? Are we celebrating the kid that got a huge box out and rebound with a bigger guy behind him? And so our coaching staff really bought into, we're going to make sure that we highlight great defensive clips and that we celebrate and get really excited in practice when we have great defensive effort. And even more than the offensive side. I mean, we're going to jump up and down and, you know, high five and help kids off the floor. And we really just bought into, they're going to take ownership of this because of it's going to come from the top. And we had a senior class that, you know, that thankfully trusted us and invested in our program. We always say that they've been the foundation of everything we've done at P Ridge because of how selfless they were. Like you're saying, everybody loves to score the basketball. It'd have been a lot easier for those guys to say, no, coach, we'd rather go and just fire that thing 1 or 2 passes. And we're going to funnel you to the rim so we can go the other way. But
little Houston Rockets style.
Houston Rockets style. And they didn't ever, you know, no complaints ever. They, you know, I think that it was a tough group, and they kind of had a little edge to them. And you know, I think they wanted to win so bad they couldn't stand it, and they just completely bought in. So couldn't have been more proud of that first group.
All right. So you mentioned your coaching staff, and so I have two questions related to that. The first one is, you mentioned how you had your coaches celebrate some of those effort plays, some of those intangible plays, some of those things that maybe the average fan who's sitting in the stands doesn't notice. So I'm assuming that those are conversations that you had to have in that first year with your coaches of, look, these are the kind of things that we're trying to emphasize. These are the kind of things that we want to make sure that in practicing and games we're recognizing. So can you describe a little bit about that? And then to go along with that same question is, how did you go about hiring your staff? Were there already people in place? How did it work when you put together your staff? And then how did you get them to all be on the same page so that you could present a united front to your players in terms of what the philosophy was going to be?
Yeah, so when I got the senior high job, the junior high job opened up, and I was fortunate enough to hire a really good junior high coach / assistant high school coach who's very disciplined, very attention to detail, is going to work harder than anybody else. And, I mean, he's now our senior high girls coach just because everybody recognizes how good of a job he does. But so what we did, and we now have four guys on staff, but then we only had two. And so what we would do is we would find time and we'd create our practice schedule. And our practice schedule was very detailed as far as everything's time segmented out. We've got a note section beside it of what are we emphasizing, what are we looking for. But we also have on the top and on the bottom of, you know, what's the key component today? What's our goal today? And I think it's very important to not only have a practice schedule made every single day, but to also have coaching staff meetings beforehand. So you can get detailed with your assistants and say, hey, you know, you got the bigs, I've got the guards. With the bigs, we're really looking to do this. I'm working guards this, and we're trying to force this way or that way, whatever it may be. But I think communication, not only with players like we've talked earlier, but I think communication with your staff and investing in them as well and giving them opportunities to grow is a key component in having a successful program. And I was fortunate enough to have a great first hire that brought a ton to our program and, you know, really invested in our kids. But I think the practice schedule and having notes of what you're emphasizing, because sometimes as coaches, we just get moving from segment to segment. And it's just, you know, we want to get it done in this time frame. Maybe we've got 5 minutes up and we just want to make sure we get everything done in that 5 minutes and move on to the next one. But I think you've got to have a goal every segment. You've got to have an emphasis every segment. And sometimes it's just easier when you've got those notes there to make sure you're not missing the attention to detail for that I mean, you're running that drill for a purpose. So it's nice to have those notes there to make sure you're not missing anything.
I agree. All right. So talk about your practice planning process. It's a good time to jump into that. Talk a little bit about how long it takes, how you go about that. Like, how do you select out what you're going to do on a given day? What do you base that on? And then how do you come up with your points of emphasis that are important day to day for your players to practice?
So out of season, when we're in off season, especially in the fall and it's early, we're trying to go. In Arkansas, we don't have any regulations and restrictions as far as you can't see your guys until November or whatever it may be. We've got them. If they're in the gym and not playing football, we can practice as long as we want to. So we try to not take advantage of that too much in the fact of going 2-3 hours early in the year and burning them out. But so in the off season, we've got an hour goal and we're going to be there for an hour. But when we're starting practices, we're going to do, whether it's off season, in season, we're going to have a lot of the same stuff at the beginning. So we're going to have dynamic stretching, a four spot layup drill, a 12 minute shooting drill, and a 3-line defensive drill. That's going to get us going every single day. So our players know what to expect. They can mentally be prepared for the first of the practice. And it's just going to get them ready to kickstart us into what we're going to do the rest of the time. I think what direction are we going to go in practice? In season, it really depends on what we're facing. Are we facing a man defense? Well, then we're going to have a segment of buildup of we're working on our base offense, we're working on sets dry, then we're going to go live for 10-12 minutes of base / sets first at defense and how they're going to guard us, and then we'll slide into a defensive segment of 3 or 4 drills of, okay, we're working on this slide, this is what they're going to do offensively, we're going to switch this, bump this, whatever it may be. But I think the importance of a practice plan is flow. And we try not to jump back and forth too much, offense, defense, offense, defense. We try to make sure our practice flows with a buildup of maybe it's running a 3-spot motion drill that leads into motion dry, that leads into motion live. And that way we can really get detailed and build up with, you know, maybe what we've seen that we're struggling with. So we're going to have more focus on this aspect and then make sure we're still preaching on what we're doing well. But I think we've got to make sure in practice that we're hitting those things that we're not doing very well and make sure we have segments for those.
When do you sit down and actually write the physical plan for what the practice is going to look like?
I like to have that done by lunch. So if we have practice at 2:20, I'm jotting down stuff for the most part in the morning and mid after and early afternoon. And then by lunch, I like to be able to have that practice schedule printed out, posted. We're having our coaches meeting, coaches staff meeting right before we've got prep, right before practice. We're going to discuss that and go over all those details. But then everybody kind of knows what's going on. So it's good to get it done a little bit earlier. But I mean, as you guys know, sometimes you're watching film a lot in the morning leading up. And as that's happening, you're starting to realize, okay, no, we're really struggling. We're giving up maybe baseline defensively, or our guards really aren't screening well in our offense. And so I don't like to do it too early in the morning. I like to watch film and kind of see how things are going, what were a couple of the things we're missing, and then create that practice plan while it's kind of fresh on my mind.
All right. So two questions that come to mind from that. One, and I know we talked about this in relation to head coaches, but your coaching staff, how many of your coaches are also teachers in your building?
So right now we've got four guys on staff, and it's kind of a unique situation. We've got three of them that are in the high school, that are in the high school building, because we're 9 through 12. So our junior high coach is in there. I'm in there, and then we've actually got our assistant junior high coach that's a 9th grade math teacher there. Our assistant varsity coach has, I believe he's got three primary PEs, but they've got his schedule set up where he doesn't have class until 10:30, and then he's done at 2. So it gives us a 30-minute gap at the end of the day to have prep together, and then he's also involved in our junior high practices in the morning as well.
Gotcha. That's a great setup.
It is. It's a phenomenal setup for us, and we're lucky to have that.
All right. So you mentioned that you're watching film to help you prepare a practice plan to make sure that you're focusing on the right things that your team needs to work on. How much film on a daily/weekly basis during the season are you watching as a high school coach? I think that's one of the things that obviously other high school coaches have a pretty good idea of how much time that we spend watching film, but I think the average parent and maybe even the average player doesn't have a real understanding of how much time coaches are putting in the film room. So can you talk a little bit about how much film you watch and then kind of explain your process for watching film, what you're looking for, how you go about doing that?
Yeah, no, so I'm kind of a film junkie. So I'm probably a little bit more than most, because we really scout hard. So we've got a 4-page scout form that we try to have every one of the opponent's offensive sets, base offense, inbound sets, sideline sets. And then we go over all of those with our players during practice. And we tell them their calls. We tell them what action they're going to do and how we're going to guard it. And so we kind of really buy into the film work. And, I mean, it's probably close to, I don't even know how many hours it is a day. I mean, it's over 4 hours a day, probably, of film work. Now, obviously, don't tell my principal and stuff that I'm watching film work. the oral comm class helps there a little bit. But
yep.
really big in the film. I think it's for a coaching staff, it's important. I think for players, it's important to at least see their opponent and kind of show them what they're trying to do. But as a coaching staff, I think the advantage that we can always give our kids is letting them know what's coming before it happens. And so it may be we go over everything, but if a team has just – if they've got a million sets, then we may just know the action to be able to – if they yell out play one and it's going to be a diagonal screen that, you know, I've got my assistant kind of paying attention to all that, and then we're relaying the message so they're prepared for, you know, the movement we're going to make on that diagonal screen. But we do. We invest big time in film and study and breakdown. And, no, it is. It's important, and – We really try to take advantage of that and give our kids an opportunity to succeed because of it.
So how much time, if you yourself are watching 4 hours, how much of that film are you sharing with your kids? How much do they spend together with you watching? And obviously, I don't know what service you guys have, whether it's Huddle or whatever, that, you know, they can obviously go on and watch on their own. But how much time do you spend with them sharing the things that you break down in the film with your players?
Yeah, so as a coaching staff, we obviously, if we've got four films of our opponent, then we're kind of breaking that down. We're all watching for certain things and going through every film. And then we ask our players to, you know, watch this game or that game on their own. And on, we have Huddle, and on Huddle, you can tell who's watching and who's not. So it kind of tells you the last 24 hours or 48 hours, how many minutes or hours they've logged in. So you can kind of, you know, as a coach who's watching and who's not, but we definitely make sure that we get a, we try to create clips instead of watching an entire film. We will highlight maybe 25 to 35 clips offensively, defensively of the opponent, and go over those with our players just to kind of let them know, because even when you create that, that scouting report, they can't visually see exactly what's going to happen. And so when you can show them, all right, this is what this play is, and this is what they're doing, or this is their base offense, and this is what their best player is looking to do, it gives them that, that mental image of, okay, this makes sense now. Now I know why we're doing this. And I think that's important. I think the confidence level, like we've talked about, instilling confidence in basketball is one of the most important things a coach can do. And I think that that's one of the small things that you can do for your players to give them confidence going into a game.
When do you watch the film? Is it before practice, before you hit the practice floor? Is that when you're watching, or when do you watch the film?
Get there and watch it in the morning. If in class, not just if there's not a whole lot's going on or they're doing research, this or that, then I'll be watching then. I'll watch at lunch. I'll watch on my prep. I'll watch after practice a little bit. I think I try to, when I go home, I try to get away from it. You know, growing up as a coach's kid, I learned that I don't need to go home and just still be investing in film and all of this 100%, that you've got to break away and make sure you're spending time with your family and investing in them. So I try to get all of that done before I go home. But you know, I think with what Huddle has given us now, being on your phone, you know, pulling it up on iPads and computers, you've always got it. So, you know, if my wife went to bed earlier, anything like that, I'd pull it up on my phone and watch even more film. But I just think that, you know, the way Huddle is, has kind of come about and everything they're doing now, it gives coaches a really easy access to pull up game film and get better.
Is your dad jealous of your film situation?
He retired 3-4 years ago, and so he got to experience it a little bit. But I remember hopping in the car with him and having to drive an hour just to meet somebody to, you know, get a CD. So it's definitely changed, and it's made scouting a lot easier as far as not having to travel as much and do all of that. So yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. You can break down a heck of a lot more film, and if you're watching 4 hours of film in 2019 compared to watching 4 hours of film in 1990, the amount that you're getting done, I always laugh because I remember even when I was in college playing and we'd watch film and the film would be on a VHS tape and the coach would have the remote control and he's trying to stop it on a certain play and he'd hit the rewind button and he'd go 2 minutes past where that was. And then you'd end up watching the same thing that was totally irrelevant for like the fourth time. And eventually you're just sitting there as a player going, this is brutal. It's not helping me at all. I'm seeing all these things that are totally irrelevant. And I can't even imagine what it was like as a coach at that level to obviously coaches at that time would have had just as much interest and desire as you do today to watch film, to gain the insights that you can get from it. But it had to be just such a much more maddening process. I can't even imagine what it was like back then to have to sit through the VHS and try to rewind and did tapes break and then mailing it and going to drive to pick stuff up. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm just glad we didn't have to do it.
it's like having to use a projector to on a like a transparency as a teacher.
Right.
You know, back in the day, it was probably very hard to do that.
It's unbelievable. My dad was a professor at Cleveland State, and he had all transparencies that he had written out.
With the vis-a-vis?
Yeah, he wrote out his notes, and so he'd have like folders of these transparencies that were his notes. So when he'd teach the class, he'd pull out, you know, whatever the folder was, and he slapped those vis-a-vis transparencies on the overhead projector. It's amazing what technology has allowed us to do in all walks of life, but from the film standpoint, it's just incredible. Let's take another technology question for you, Trent, and that is, what's your thought as far as analytics and how do you use them with your team? Is there anything that specific stats or things that you look for with your team that you guys chart that you really feel helps lead to your team's success?
Yeah, so with the luxury of having four guys on staff, I've got one guy that's in charge of like the scout and he's paying attention to play calls of the other team and all of that stuff so we can relay our message. Then I've got another guy that's kind of jotting down foul count, and he also has foul count, timeout count for us and them. But then I've got a guy that's also tracking a lot of this type of stuff. And he's tracking paint touches. He's tracking deflections. He's tracking turnovers. He's tracking just, you know, 6, 7, 8 things of us individually, but then them as a team, our opponent as a team. And paint touches are a big deal for us. And so when we go into halftime, if they've got more paint touches than we feel like they need to have, then that's something we can work on. But I think the analytics part, and I think, you know, we use that technology, but I think with him being able to have it pen and paper and get it quick and immediately, if he messes up right now, that he can fix it. I think that that's a big advantage for us going into halftime when he can look at me and say, Coach, we've given up X amount of offensive rebounds this half, and, you know, they've gotten to the paint this many times, or we've turned it over and they've gotten this many deflections. So I think that's nice to go in there at halftime and be able to tell your guys just hard number stats and them say, yeah, okay, no, that makes sense, Coach. I get it. We do need to clean that up. So instead of just trying to ballpark something. So the analytics side is, I think it's extremely important. And we try to go in and stat all that stuff after games. But the in-game analytics, I think, is big as well.
Is that something that you had set up right from day one when you first took over the job? Or is that something that's evolved over time?
No, that's something we've added as our staff's gotten bigger and we've had the opportunity to do that. We tried to do it a little earlier with managers and stuff, but I mean, obviously those kids weren't ready for the detail. They did the best they could and gave us everything they possibly could. But I think when you've got a coach that's on staff that knows exactly what you're looking for, I think it's a big advantage. So we've been fortunate enough to add that the last couple of years, and it's been extremely important for our basketball program.
So if you look back on the totality of your time thus far at Pea Ridge, what are some of the things that you're proudest of that you've been able to do with the program from the day you took over until where you are now at the end of the 2019 season?
You know, I feel like what we've done at Pea Ridge, and Pea Ridge was a great Pea Ridge was a great basketball program before I took over, but I feel like we've had the opportunity to grow it even farther with the way Northwest Arkansas is growing. Our community's getting bigger, and we've just kind of had the opportunity to put Pea Ridge statewide on the map a little bit. And our players, I've been fortunate enough and blessed enough the last, you know, 6, 7 years to have really good players that are committed and that are selfless, and obviously we're talented, but I'm proud of where our program is because I feel like we're not only developing good basketball players, but good people. And I feel like we've got, you know, I think outside communities see that as well. And I think that we're a well-respected program right now.
All right. So one of the things I wanted to ask you back when we were talking about when you first took over the job is one of the things that I would have to believe was maybe a challenge for you at that time. And obviously you've seen your dad in these situations, but how did you go about, we talked about how you built trust with your players. How did you go about building that trust with the parents of your players and engaging the parents in your program? Because obviously as a 24-year-old, most of those parents that you're dealing with are older than you are. And so they're looking at you, I'm sure, as, hey, who's this young kid who's coming in and thinking he's a hotshot coach and he's going to take over this program? How did you engage those parents? And then how have you continued to evolve in the way that you've kept your parents involved in your program?
Man, I've been so fortunate to have just great parents at Pea Ridge and sports-minded parents that understand it, that get it. But as far as gaining their trust, I think when they know you and that you really care about their kid and that you invest in their kid, I think as parents, they respect that and they appreciate that. When they see you at other events that their kids do just to support them, when they see you, you know, and you come up and talk to them outside of basketball or at the gym or whatever, I think there's opportunities as a coach to gain parents' respect. And that is, that's not being standoffish. That's not being arrogant. That is going out of your way to have conversation. That is not being afraid to reach out if you feel like their son is, you know, if he's been upset about something for a couple of days and you can't figure it out. I think that you've got to go out of your way to build those relationships. But I've been very fortunate to just have great parents, and they've made it really easy on me the first, you know, 7-8 years of my career.
Yeah, I think what I hear you saying is that communication with parents is critical, and not just communication when there's a problem, but communication before any potential issues arise. So if you've already built that relationship, just like you want to build a relationship with a player, by building relationships with the parents prior to there being an issue, whether it's with playing time or something else, if you have that relationship with the parent, now that conversation about playing time or some other issue, I'm sure it's a much easier conversation than it is when you haven't had that relationship and now suddenly you have to have that, you know, that difficult conversation, which, just like as a teacher, if you never hear from the teacher ever and never hear anything good, there's no relationship there, and then all of a sudden we got to call and talk about a problem we're having in class, that's a much more difficult talk to have than when you've built that prior relationship. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, 100%. I think communication just throughout in your basketball program with players, with parents, is crucial. I think as a coach, the coach-parent relationship of being transparent in a way of, obviously, I think there's certain things you do, you talk about with parents, and there's certain things you don't, but I think that they've got to know, and I think parents can tell when you're truthful, when you're honest, when you're genuine. You know, if you're the guy that's going out of your way to shake their hand and, you know, make sure you're saying hey when you see them at other events as well, I think that stuff goes a long way as far as, like you're saying, when those other conversations have to happen, of them knowing that, look, he does, he likes my son, he's got my son's back, he's not picking on him. And I think that those side conversations really do help in all that, all those areas.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you're a coach out there and you're listening, and the more preemptive conversations you can have, the more you can build relationships with your parents. I think the same goes for your administration, whether that be your AD, your principal, the other coaches on the coaching staff that coach other sports. I think the more you engage those people in conversation and get to know them and build relationships, it allows you, when you do have a situation that arises where there's a conflict of interest or a difference, you know, in opinion, it makes it much easier to have those conversations with people when you've already invested in them and built up those relationships. So I want to ask you the next question, and that is, we talked about kind of how you set your philosophy in your first year, where you wanted to be known as a tough, defensive-minded team, and you felt like maybe you were going to have some difficulty scoring, so you wanted to hang your hat on the defensive end of the floor. Let's fast forward now to this past season, or even look ahead to next year. When people come out and watch your team play, what are one, two, three things that, if I'm a casual fan, I'm sitting in the stands and I go watch Pea Ridge basketball, what are the things that you'd want that fan to walk away saying, man, Pea Ridge is really all about this? What are those things that you'd want to be known for?
Yeah, so, you know, that first year we really bought in. It was defensive minded, but we knew we had a group coming through in junior high that was really talented, and they were going to mix with some, when they were sophomores, they were going to mix with some talented seniors and have a good junior mix in there. And then we knew that we were about to take off just because of, you know, just the type of players we had. And so obviously our offensive system picked up, and as those kids came through, our win total went way up, and these kids bought in. They still, I think if anyone came and watched, they would still say, wow, these guys defensively, they guard, they communicate. You're going to have trouble scoring on them. They're going to force you to take a shot you don't want to take, and then they're going to box out. And I think every group we've had since that first group has done that really well. Offensively, you're going to see you'd see a lot of sets from us, but as our more talented groups came through, you saw a lot of fast place play. You saw some ball screens, spread the floor, ball screen stuff to let our guards go make plays. And we've always been able to shoot the basketball really well. So we'd spread the floor, set some ball screens, and then we were going to penetrate and kick to a shooter, or we were going to get downhill and make a play. So The style definitely got a lot more fun for our guys as the years have went on, but they've still consistently stayed true to our defensive mindset. And, you know, as coaches, you know when you've got talented groups coming through. And when our good group were sophomores, they went 20-10. Then they were juniors, and we went 23-7. But we knew we had a huge chunk of them back. And so we created a hashtag going into their senior year that we've used for the last 4 years, which is one beat, one bounce. And the one beat is one heartbeat, everybody playing together, playing for each other. And the one bounce is for one bounce of the ball at a time, one step at a time, not getting ahead of ourselves. And I feel like our program has really taken ownership of that hashtag. And we do. Our guys take every practice serious. They take every game serious. They never look ahead. And that I think that's something that people would say about us. It doesn't matter the opponent, that our guys are going to come out and play their hearts out and play the same way versus anybody.
Yeah, I love that you have that hashtag, and whether you call it a hashtag or you call it a motto or you call it a slogan, whatever it is, I think that it's a way, it sounds silly, but I think it's a great way to unite your program. And that starts all the way from your varsity team. And I'm sure you share that down too from your previous experiences with the junior high program and all that stuff. I think that's a big part of having a successful program, is you get everybody thinking in the same way. And a nice quick little hashtag like that is a great way to convey what your program's all about. I want to ask you two more things, Trent, before we wrap up. The first one is, talk a little bit about what you do as far as engaging your youth program and the younger kids that are in your school district to get them involved in your program, to get them aspiring to possibly one day put on a varsity uniform. What are some of the things that you do with the youth program there in Pea Ridge?
Yeah, so we've got a little kids camp that we do in the summer that we call Little Hawks Camp, and we start investing in our kids 2nd through 7th grade, allowing them to come to this camp. And, you know, we give the t-shirts and do all of that. But one thing we started about 5-6 years ago is we've always had our youth league for our little YCB teams at Pea Ridge. But what we started doing was we've started putting former players that know our system in these leagues as our coaches. And so now they're teaching these kids what we want them to be taught. And they're also, you know, being taught by former players that a lot of these kids and parents have watched play. And so that's been something that I think has really helped us as far as investing in our youth program, getting our players involved in our youth program. We had a couple of players this year that were volunteer assistant coaches in our youth program. And we've got our coaches that go and watch on Saturdays when they can and try to stop by some practices. But I think that you've definitely got to invest in your future and in your culture with making sure that your high school team is invested in your junior high team and so on and so forth going down the line. But we've really tried to get involved in our youth league and kind of getting a little more ownership of that with former players and having guys that know our drills, know our terminology, and just trying to give our kids in Pea Ridge a head start before they get into 7th grade.
Yeah, I love that. Having former players invest with the younger kids. I think anytime you can forge a connection between the varsity program and the younger kids, you give them, just think about your own experience with your dad and being around those kids all the time. You mentioned it right off the top of the podcast. You know, you looked up to those kids and you wanted to be like them. And part of the reason why that was the case is because you had obviously a tremendous amount of exposure to the kids in your dad's program. And so when you can give the kids in your community exposure to your program, whether that's through, you know, coming to a game, whether that's through coming to camp and working with you directly, whether that's through former players coaching their teams in a youth league, those are all things that lead to those 2nd, 3rd, 4th graders looking up to the varsity program and saying, wow, someday I want to put on that uniform and be out on that court and play for Coach Lloyd. And those are things that are invaluable to me as you're trying to build a program. It's one of the things that I really like to see when I look around at coaches here in the Cleveland area, or I've talked to, you know, we've obviously talked to a ton of guys now on the show over the last year. And I think that's one of the things that the best coaches who have had the most success do really well is they invest in their youth program. And by doing that, it builds not just them coaching their varsity team, but they're coaching the totality of the program. I think that's so important. I want to go kind of full circle back to where we started and talk a little bit about now how you utilize your dad as a resource now that he's retired and no longer coaching in his full-time position. How do you use him to help you to be a better coach day to day, season to season? How does he help you?
You know, I've with him retiring from basketball, he's still doing athletic director stuff, but knowing now that he's not watching as much film all the time, I use him as a resource probably more than I should. I mean, I call him daily, and during season, it may be 2 to 3 times if I need to talk to him. And, you know, even when he was still coaching and I was just getting started with high school stuff and junior high, he would still answer that phone call every time. He'd take time away from his film to help me. And, you know, I use him a ton. I'd be crazy not to. You know, he's got 700 plus wins here in Arkansas, and I think he's one of the greatest to ever do it. And I know there's other people that think that as well. But, you know, when you've got a dad that's highly respected and you've seen him personally do things the right way and how detailed he gets, you know, I've told him that if he ever wants me to stop calling as much, that he needs to let me know. And he hasn't stopped me yet. So I use him as a big time resource. I'll send him clips and let him watch this and that and say, hey, how would you guard this? Or what would you do here? And it seems like he's always got the right answer for me. So it's a big time resource to have. It's a big time advantage that I've got having somebody like that in my corner. And I just make sure to take advantage of it as much as I can. I have him come and watch a couple practices in the fall every year and let him see our guys. And we go through and do certain drills and we scrimmage and go live and do, you know, just all kinds of stuff so he can see visually, you know, where we're at and what we need to get better at before season starts. So I try to take full advantage of him. And luckily I've got a dad that's such a great role model and invest in my career as well.
Do you think if he retires from ADing, you'd ever consider asking him to be on your staff, or would that be too weird?
Oh, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I just think if he's going to retire, I think he wants to play golf more than probably. Gym. So there'd have to be some sweet talking.
There you go. You'd have to not only be a head varsity basketball coach, you'd also have to be a pretty good salesman, I guess, in that case. So does he get to many of your games?
He does. They make as many of them as possible. I've got a mom that's just the best. And, you know, as a coach's wife, she's been doing it forever. And when dad retired, she makes pretty much every single one of my games. And it's an hour and 15 minute drive from my hometown. And whether it's on a Tuesday or Friday, or if it's a 2 hour drive, whenever it is, she's at every one. And when he can get away, I bet he makes close to half of them. So it's awesome to have two parents that are so supportive and try to find ways to still make it to your games. And it's really cool to have parents like that.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have that kind of support. Again, if you have that kind of support, sometimes it's easy to take for granted. And I know that just from talking to you tonight, I could tell that you don't, and you don't take it lightly, the contributions that your dad has made to just you as a person, and then obviously to you as a basketball coach, and to have your mom to be able to be supportive. And we all know how important a coach's wife is to the coach's success, and being able to understand some of the things that coaches go through and the amount of time that all of us put in. It's critical for our wives to be on board with what we're doing. Cause otherwise we know it can get difficult when you spend the amount of time that, you know, that you put in doing things. We can vouch for that. Just for doing a little podcast, can sometimes be a challenge in that respect, if you don't have the support of your family and the people around you. So it's great to hear that you have that. Trent, I want to wrap up by giving you a chance to share your contact information so that anybody who's listening tonight who maybe wants to reach out and ask you a question or just say hello can do that. And then also, if you have anything that we didn't touch on that you want to share before we get out of here, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Okay, yeah, before I get to the contact info, I've also got to brag about my wife as well and how supportive she is. I've got
Absolutely.
Dad and mom, but I've got a wife that she makes everything as well and all the games and practices that she can, and it's just nice to have somebody supportive like you're saying. Coaches' wives they're special, and for them to deal and put up with us during season, to have someone, you know, like her in the corner as well, is big. But no, all my contact information is phone numbers 479-651-8710. My email address is tloyd1023@gmail.com. And then I'm on Twitter, just Trent Lloyd, and then it's @CoachTLloyd. And on Twitter, if any of that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, if anybody needs any of that information or wants more stuff, just always feel free to get a hold of me. So it was an honor to be a part of this podcast. It's awesome seeing what you guys are doing with this and all the coaches that you're helping out. I know I'm following along closely, trying to get as many pointers and ideas that I can from you guys with everything you're doing. So greatly appreciate everything you're doing growing our game.
Well, we appreciate you. This doesn't happen without guys like you and all the other great guests we've been able to have. You know, we're looking at it as we're sort of just we're the mouthpiece, we're the microphone to give you guys an opportunity to share with each other. And that to me is really what it's all about. I think you made a great statement there about trying to grow the game. And really when we started, we weren't sure where it was going to go, but we definitely knew that our mission was to help to grow the game of basketball and make it better. And hopefully we're able to do that in some small way, again, mostly through the guys like you that are coming out and sharing the great things that you're doing for the game and for kids. And that's really what it's all about. And if somebody is out there listening, just like you've listened to other coaches, if people are out there and they're listening to you tonight, hopefully they're able to pick up one or two things that they can take back with them and make their team, make their experience with the game better. And that to us is really what it's all about. So again, Trent, we can't thank you enough for jumping on tonight with us and spending some time. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
The Hoopheads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.